Hello, this is the September 23rd lesson for Math 310. And we're going to start learning about proofs. So I start out here making some prefatory remarks. When a chemist asserts that a substance that is subjected to heat will tend to expand, he or she verifies the assertion through an experiment. It is a consequence of the definition of heat that heat will excite the atomic particles in the substance. It is plausible that this, in turn, will necessitate expansion of the substance. However, our knowledge of nature is not such that we may turn these theoretical ingredients into a categorical proof. Additional complications arise from the fact that the word expand requires detailed definition. Apply heat to water that is temperature 40 degrees Fahrenheit or above, and it expands. With enough heat, it becomes a gas that surely fills more volume than the original water. But apply heat to a diamond, and there is no apparent expansion, at least not to the naked eye. Mathematics is a less ambitious subject in some sense. In particular, it is closed. What does this mean? It means it does not reach outside itself for verification of its assertions. When we make an assertion in mathematics, we must verify it using the rules that we have laid down. That is, we verify it by using our rules of logic and applying them to our axioms and our definitions. In other words, we construct a proof. An earlier lecture contained some discussion of proofs and rules of logic. In modern mathematics, we have discovered that there are perfectly sensible mathematical statements that, in fact, cannot be verified in this fashion, nor they can be proven false. This is a manifestation of Gödel's incompleteness theorem, that any sufficiently complex logical system will contain such unverifiable, indeed untestable, statements. Fortunately, in practice, such statements are the exception rather than the rule. In this book, and in almost all of university-level mathematics, we concentrate on learning about statements whose truth or falsity is accessible by way of proof. So this chapter considers the notion of mathematical proof. We shall concentrate on the three principal types of proof, namely direct proof, proof by contradiction, and proof by mathematical induction. Some other miscellaneous methods of proof will be treated as well. This latter category will include proof by enumeration, proof by exhaustion, proof by cases, proof by contraposition, and several others. In practice, a mathematical proof may contain elements of several or all of these techniques. You will see all the basic elements here. You should be sure to master each of these proof techniques, both so that you can recognize them in your reading and so that they become tools that you can use in your own work. Put in other words, you need to learn to read proofs, you need to learn to understand proofs, and you need to learn to create your own proofs. That's one of the main purposes of this course. So in this lecture, we shall assume that you're familiar with the positive integers, which we call the natural numbers. We'll have a detailed treatment of the natural numbers later on in the course. This number system, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc., is denoted by the symbol blackboard bold N. For now, we will take the elementary arithmetic properties of N for granted. That is to say, we can multiply two elements of N, or we can add two elements of N. And the answer will always be an element of N. We cannot subtract an N, and we cannot divide an N. We shall formulate various statements about natural numbers and prove them. Our methodology will emulate the discussions in earlier lectures. We begin with a definition. A natural number N is said to be even if, when it is divided by 2, there is no remainder. It's said to be odd if, when it is divided by 2, the remainder is 1. The division algorithm tells us that when you divide an integer by 2, that the remainder will either be 0 or 1. Those are the only two possibilities. If the remainder is 0, the number is even. If the remainder is 1, the number is odd. Okay, so everybody has an intuitive idea of what even and odd mean, but these more precise definitions are in fact very useful, as we're about to see. So a good definition should be precise, but it should also appeal to your heuristic idea about the concept that we're discussing, and I think our definitions of even and odd fit that description. So according to these definitions, any natural number is either even or odd. For if n is any natural number we divide it by 2, then the remainder will always be 0 or 1. There's no other possibility. In what follows, we will find it convenient to think of an even natural number as one having the form 2m for some natural m, and an odd natural number as one having the form 2k plus 1, or sometimes 2k minus 1, for some natural number k. This is just another way of saying that an even number, when you divide it by 2, if it has the form 2m, when you divide by 2, the quotient is m and there's no remainder. If it has the form 2k plus 1, you divide by 2, the quotient is k and the remainder is 1. So this is just another way of saying what we already said earlier. Now, let us formulate a statement about the natural numbers and prove it. Following tradition, we refer to formal mathematical statements as either theorems or propositions, or sometimes as lemmas or corollaries. A theorem is supposed to be an important statement that is the culmination of some development of significant ideas. A proposition is a statement of lesser intrinsic importance. A lemma is usually of no intrinsic importance, but is needed as a step along the way to verifying a theorem or a proposition. Finally, a corollary is usually a direct consequence of a theorem or a proposition. The corollary could often be a matter of considerable interest, but its proof should be a brief consequence of the theorem or proposition in question. So here's our first proposition. The square of an even natural number is even. Proof. Let us begin by using what we learned in an earlier lecture. We may reformulate our statement as, if n is even, then n dot n is even. This statement makes a promise. Refer to the definition of even to see what that promise is. The promise is, if n can be written as twice a natural number, then n dot n can be written as twice a natural number. The hypothesis of the assertion is that n equals 2m for some natural number m, but then n squared is n dot n, which is 2m times 2m, which is 4m squared, which is 2 times the quantity 2m squared. Our calculation shows that n squared is twice the natural number 2m squared, so n squared is also even. We have shown that the hypothesis that n is twice a natural number entails the conclusion that n squared is twice a natural number. In other words, if n is even, then n squared is even. That is the end of our proof. So here's a remark. What is the role of truth tables at this point? Why did we not use a truth table to verify our proposition? One could think of the statement that we are proving as the conjunction of infinitely many specific statements about concrete instances of the variable n, and then we could verify each one of those statements. But such a procedure is inelegant and, more importantly, impractical. For our purposes, the truth table tells us what we must do to construct a proof. The truth table for A implies B shows that if A is false, and there is nothing to check, whereas if A is true, then we must show that B is true. That is what we just did in the proof of the preceding proposition. Most of our theorems are for all statements or their exist statements. In practice, it is not usually possible to verify them directly by use of a truth table. Here is another proposition that we're going to prove. The square of an odd natural number is odd. We follow the paradigm laid down in the proof of the previous proposition. Assume that n is odd, then n equals 2m plus 1 for some natural number m, but then n squared is n dot n, which is 2m plus 1 times 2m plus 1, which is 4m squared plus 4m plus 1, which is 2 times 2m squared plus 2 plus 1. We see that n squared is 2m prime plus 1, where m prime is 2m squared plus 2m. In other words, according to our definition, n squared is odd. Both of the proofs we have presented so far are examples of what we call direct proof. A direct proof proceeds according to the statement being proved. For instance, if we are proving a statement about a square, then we calculate that square. If we are proving a statement about a sum, then we calculate that sum. Here are some additional examples of direct proof. Prove that if n is a positive integer, then the quantity n squared plus 3n plus 2 is even. So denote the quantity n squared plus 3n plus 2 by k. Observe that k equals n squared plus 3n plus 2, which is n plus 1 times n plus 2. Thus, k is the product of two successive integers, n plus 1 and n plus 2. One of those integers must be even and one must be odd. Well, since one of them is even, then it's a multiple of 2, and therefore k itself is a multiple of 2, and hence k is even. And that's the end of the proof. Here's another proposition, the sum of two odd natural numbers is even. Now, if you were on a desert island making up mathematics, you might think that, poetically, the sum of two odd natural numbers should be odd. But that's not the way we do math. The way we do math is by investigating and thinking and coming up with a proof. So suppose P and Q are two odd natural numbers. According to the definition of odd, P is 2R plus 1, and Q is 2s plus 1 for some natural numbers R and S, then P plus Q is 2R plus 1 plus 2S plus 1, which is 2R plus 2S plus 2, which is 2 times R plus S plus 1. We have realized P plus Q as twice the natural number R plus S plus 1. Therefore, P plus Q is even. Now, it's also the case that the sum of two even numbers is even. And we'll think about that later on. In some subjects, such as literary criticism or philosophy, it is common to reason by analogy or to present ideas so that they sound good. If we did mathematics solely according to what sounds good or what appeals intuitively, then we might reason as follows. If the sum of two odd natural numbers is even, then it must be the case that the sum of two even natural numbers is odd. But that's incorrect. For instance, 4 and 6 are even, but their sum, 4 plus 6 equals 10, is also even, not odd. Intuition definitely plays an important role in the development of mathematics, but all assertions in mathematics must, in the end, be proved by rigorous methods. So here's another example. Prove that the sum of an even integer and an odd integer is odd. An even integer e is divisible by 2, so it can be written as e equals 2m, where m is an integer. An odd integer, o, has remainder 1 when divided by 2, so it can be written in the form 0, o equals 2k plus 1, where k is an integer. The sum of e and o is 2m plus the quantity 2k plus 1, which is twice m plus k plus 1. Thus we see that the sum of an even integer and an odd integer will have remainder 1 when divided by 2. Therefore, the sum is odd. And now we come to verifying something that I told you about a few minutes ago. The sum of two even natural numbers is even. Let P be 2R and Q be 2S, both be even natural numbers. Then P plus Q is 2R plus 2S, which is twice the quantity R plus S. So therefore, P plus Q is twice a natural number and hence is even. Here's one that's slightly different from the previous examples we've looked at. Let n be a natural number, then either n is bigger than 6 or n is less than 9. If you draw a picture of a number line, then you will have no trouble convincing yourself of the truth of this assertion. What we want to learn here is to organize our thoughts so that we may write down a rigorous proof. Refer to our discussion of the connective or in an earlier lecture. Now, fix a natural number n. If n is bigger than 6, then the or statement is true and there's nothing to prove. If n is not greater than 6, then the truth table teaches us that we must check that n is less than 9. But the statement n is not greater than 6 means that n is less than or equal to 6, so therefore n is less than or equal to 6, which is less than 9, and that is what we wish to prove. That's the end of the proof. So you notice here that we've very carefully used the exact definition of the word or and its truth properties. Example, prove that every even integer may be written as the sum of two odd integers. Let the even integer k equal 2m for m an integer. If m is odd, then we write k equals 2m equals m plus m, and we have written k as the sum of two odd integers. If instead m is even, then we write k equals 2m equals m minus 1 plus m plus 1. Since m is even, then both m minus 1 and m plus 1 are odd. So again, we have written k as the sum of two odd integers. Now, here's something that's really different from what we've done up till now. Let's prove the Pythagorean theorem. The Pythagorean theorem states that c squared equals a squared plus b squared, where a and b are the legs of a right triangle, and c is the hypotenuse. Look at the figure to see what I'm talking about. Consider now the arrangement of four triangles in a square shown in figure 2.2 below. So you see that we have a square in the middle and four triangles around the outside edges. And those four triangles around the outside edges are exact copies of the original triangle with sides ABC. So we see that each side of the all-encompassing square has size C. So this area of the entire big square is C squared. Each of the component triangles has base A and height B. So each such triangle has area AB over 2. And the little square in the middle has side B minus A, so it has area B minus A quantity squared, which is B squared minus 2AB plus A squared. So we write the total area of the entire big square, C squared, as the sum of its component areas, 4 times AB over 2, plus B squared minus 2AB plus A squared equals A squared plus B squared. And that's the Pythagorean theorem.
Yeah.
In this section and the next too, we are concerned with form rather than substance. We are not interested in proving anything profound, but rather in showing you what a proof looks like. Later in the book, we will consider some deeper types of proofs. Thank you for listening today. I will see you next time.